Whether you drive a car,
need a car,
or just occasionally bum a ride with friends,
you've come to the right place.
Join Jill and Tom as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews,
shopping tips,
driving green,
electric cars,
classic cars,
and plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, this is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom. Thank you for joining us today. When you have a chance, check us out at consumerguide.com. Lots of fun stuff there. Check out our 2025 Best Buy picks. Listen to back episodes of the podcast or go to the blog for any of the hilarious, the chortle-inducing stuff I published. Jill is frowning.
Is it chortle-inducing?
It is. Mm. Hilarious. Hilarious.
Hilarious.
I love to do stuff with old car ads.
Okay.
And there's some great paradoxes there. Like, for example, when the AMC Gremlin came out, was it 70? They advertised that it was heavy. It was a small car, supposed to get better mileage, but it was heavy, and that was good.
Okay.
So that's a paradox, if not a contradiction.
Small and heavy?
Yeah. An irony. That voice is Jill Simonillo, Managing Editor of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk, North American Car of the Year juror, and a freelancer.
Yes.
All right. How you doing?
Good.
Now, you moved a few weeks ago. Are you all tidied in?
Yes. So I did a smart thing in that, like, we moved on a Thursday and I scheduled our cleaning person for the following Thursday so that I would have no choice but to get everything sorted and organized.
Yeah.
It was not easy. I love my husband. Let's start there. But, like, I unpacked pretty much everything and I hung pretty much everything. And he's like, hey, I helped. And I was like, you being on your phone sitting there watching me hang stuff is not helping.
It's motivational.
Oh, and the first night we moved in, he literally like fell asleep. We had one chair that was not like covered in boxes and moving stuff. He literally fell asleep in the chair. And this is like before like our bed is unpacked and our bedroom is set or anything. And I was just like, all right, I guess I'm doing this alone. Yay.
All right.
Yeah. So, but yes, everything is sorted and yeah, I like it. I like our new space.
I have a mea culpa.
Okay.
I mentioned searching for Mr. Goodbar a few weeks ago.
Yes.
And I said that...
Barbara Hershey, was it?
Yeah, it's Diane Keaton.
Okay.
Fiorani. You know. Sam Fiorani called me out on that one.
Same.
This seems like a movie Sam would enjoy.
Yes. I don't know. I mean, I don't... You laugh at me because I don't know what that is, but yeah.
Later on, we're going to talk to Chris Martin. He's Technology Communications Manager for Honda. But first, there's a story here that I didn't consider, and it seems obvious. But the tariffs are going to be really hard on Buick.
I could see that as being correct.
Buick sells four models right now.
Yes.
And only the Enclave, the big crossover, the Enclave, is made in the U.S.
Yeah.
The very popular Envista.
Mm-hmm.
And the Encore GX, they're little cars. They're very nice, upscale little cars.
Little SUVs, very, not cars.
That's true, but they are car-like. But yes, they are little crossovers. Selling well for them, making them a little money, but they both come from Korea.
Mm.
They're built in South Korea.
Okay.
And the Envision, built in China.
Yep.
That's a problem.
Yep.
So Buick, it was on a tear for a while. Like, wow, we've got all sorts of product here that people want, and now people can't get it, maybe.
Well, so I'm wondering if there's going to be some corporate strategy that comes in with the tariffs, because, you know, GM is a big company. So Buick is made by General Motors, and General Motors is a big company that makes a lot of cars in the United States. So I'm wondering if there's, you know, some robbing Peter to pay Paul kind of thing that could happen that makes these cars still viable and accessible.
Not the Korean cars,
I don't think.
Because they're specific. They're actually using evolutions of Korean architecture.
No, but I'm just saying, like, you would still make them in Korea, but being able to sell them here, even though, and keeping the price the same, because maybe they could, like, do something, you know, with the cars that are being built in the United States. So I'm just wondering if there's
Volvo had worked that swap, and I believe that swap is dead, where Volvo was going to build, and I think it was based not on units built, but on dollar value of product produced. But Volvo was going to build a certain number of vehicles here that was going to offset their imports from China and allow them to dodge import tariffs. But I think that's off the table now.
Yeah. Well, I just wonder if there's something, though. We're still early days in whatever this tariff game is, and there's still a lot of unknowns, and I don't know. Buick is a quote-unquote American brand, and yes, they are making some cars overseas, but I just have to think that there's something that will allow that to continue to happen.
We'll see.
Yes.
I think everything.
TBD!
I think it's going to be darkest before the dawn, yeah. And it's not near dawn yet.
No.
Unfortunately.
No, we're like at midnight, I think, maybe.
I wanted to talk a little bit about super fast charging.
Okay.
And why it's kind of a scam.
Okay.
BYD, for example, this is the company that's selling $10,000 electric vehicles in China, introduced some super fast charging recently in the media lap. You know, got all over it, and they were talking about how fast it is. Anyway, something called the Shangxing Super Fast Charging. It's a battery that will allow an owner to pick up 520 kilometers in 5 minutes. That's about 300 miles in 5 minutes. Here's the thing about that. That sounds cool.
Mm-hmm.
Nowhere in the U.S. will you ever be able to do that. It just sounds cool. But the thing is that the infrastructure out there for level 3 public charging, the fastest that's ever going to be is 350 kilowatts, and you simply can't get more blood from a stone. That's the energy you get.
Well, I mean, for now, and maybe someday they will build something faster, but what we have right now...
No one is going to pay for that. That's the thing. You would have to find someone who wanted to build a charger that was that fast, and then people who would be willing to pay for charging that fast, and it would be really premium priced.
Yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying. There are people who would pay that.
Yeah, enough. It's not going to work.
I mean, somebody who owns a $100,000 like EV, like they would pay that.
But you'd still have to find a place to build that.
I know.
And you're not going to find it in a roadside stand. Right now, the situation is getting enough energy to do what we're doing. And the infrastructure isn't there to support this. I think I told you the story once, but there's a Walgreens just down the street from here. In Palatine, Illinois, and they put in a level 3 charger that was installed, and then it sat there idle for like 18 months because no one knew how much money it was going to cost to get the electricity to that charger. So to get to get you just to 100 kilowatts cost something like $400,000 at that location. It was ridiculous.
Is it operable now?
It is. That's actually the one I'm always complaining about on X because it never, ever works.
Oh.
And that's not the line from Commonwealth Edison, ComEd. That is that the device itself is hyper faulty. I posted a picture a couple of weeks ago, of a Silverado EV, black. I think it was an RST. Really good looking truck.
Yeah.
And two poor people outside trying to get the charger to work. Nothing.
And you're like, nothing. Yeah.
Nothing.
So I will say that is the one thing about my new location. I previously was able to plug in at home to charge EVs and plug-in hybrids, and now my new garage does not have a place to plug in. So I'm going to have to find a place to public charge when I have EVs.
Oh, wait, say that again. So you don't have a garage space?
I have a garage space, but the garage space does not have a plug.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah.
Because even just plugging into a 110 outlet is something.
Yeah, and I, you know, so my new space is not a typical like house garage type thing. Mm-hmm. It's actually like I'm in a, I want to say like a 40 unit building that has like actual under the building parking. So and I looked all through the garage. I'm like, maybe there's a parking space somewhere that has a plug, and nothing.
You could be the catalyst for them getting chargers.
Or not.
Yeah.
Or not. I mean, it's always worth asking, but I'm gonna say that's probably I've already put in probably my limit of new tenant maintenance requests. They're probably like, ugh.
I bet you're super irritating when it comes to tenant requests.
I'm trying not to be.
Oh.
I replaced my own toilet seats. I didn't make them do that.
Because you're the person that didn't want other people to touch your clothes.
That is true.
Yeah.
That is true.
But you let them touch your dishware.
I did. But yeah. I washed all of my dishware before I put it away, so, you know.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
We didn't talk too much about the New York Auto Show, but I did want to address one thing that's just a little irritating.
Okay.
And maybe it's not the only trim level, but we saw the 2026 Hyundai Palisade redesigned, mostly, and for some reason, it's even bigger.
Yeah, and new powertrains.
Well, new hybrid, which is interesting.
The engine is also new.
This is one of those things where they say it's new, but it's the same displacement as the old engine, and it has roughly the same horsepower.
Not the same.
No, it's still 3.5 liter six.
It? Yeah. Okay.
For some reason, they did not go to a base turbocharged engine, which I thought they might do.
Yeah, so it's still a V6, less horsepower, I think.
I know, I thought it was a slight bump up.
I didn't, like,
281
you and
to 289.
I may have been looking at, because when I wrote the story, I said less horsepower.
Oh.
So I don't know.
We'll check that during a commercial break, but
again,
I thought it went from 281 to 289.
I've been moving, so
yep.
Brain not working.
But the thing about that vehicle, though, that's interesting is there's now an XRT version of it,
mm-hmm.
which for some reason, why can't they ever stick with a name? Like XRT.
Oh, yeah. Now it's XRT Pro.
Yeah, like stop.
Well, you know, they're mimicking Toyota, probably.
Yeah. Don't do that.
TRD Pro.
The TRD lineup is very confusing. TRD Sport, TRD Pro.
Well, Toyota Racing Division, Sport, Toyota Racing Division, you know, Pro, Toyota Racing Division Off-Road.
Yeah, TRD yeah. Caffeine Free, which is weird.
That's unacceptable.
Yeah. The Kia K4.
Yes.
So we saw that vehicle. We've talked about that vehicle. Mm-hmm. Now there's a hatchback.
Wagon.
I like the look.
Yeah. No, it looks really good.
Yeah, wagon or hatchback. It's attractive.
Yeah.
You're calling it a wagon?
I'm calling it a wagon. Kia probably wouldn't like that. So it's a hatchback.
And the, speaking, no one has more trim level names than Kia for everything.
Oh, and they're like X-Line GT Pro 4X,
yeah.
Whatever. Yeah,
yeah,
it's like,
ridiculous.
What?
And now the EV9, their big
uh-huh.
electric vehicle,
uh-huh.
has a new top trim level
uh-huh.
called Nightfall. Like, where is that? There's no hyphen. There's no numbers. There's no X. There's no Pro.
Nightfall. Is it like a black edition?
I don't know, because I still can't get my head around Toyota's Nightshade trim levels, which seem to be like a value trim level, like in the middle of each lineup.
I don't know. I just think of eggplants when I hear Nightshade.
Well, that's what it is. But I think it's usually like they're trying to like make that be the volume vehicle. You see that, and you wonder if dealers like bother with other trim levels if they can get just a bunch of Nightshades in there and sell them.
But I'm wondering if people are allergic.
What?
Nightshades are highly allergic.
There's no nightshades in the car, Joe.
Okay.
All right.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, a couple weeks ago, we talked about the Maverick Lobo.
Mm-hmm.
But you saw that at a trip where you also were introduced to a new Sasquatch model.
Yeah, so the Bronco Sport for 2025 gets a Sasquatch package.
So the Bronco Sport, way more successful than it should have been for Ford. Because it's about the same size and roughly the same price as the Ford Escape.
Which I believe they share a platform.
And they have nudged the Escape out of the lineup. The
yes,
Escape
they
is
have.
Actually going away.
Yeah.
So the Bronco Sport, not known for its rear seat legroom, is going to replace the Escape at some point.
Yes.
But it does look cool and off-roady.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great look, great design, popular with people. And they've, what do they do?
So they added the Sasquatch package, so they made it even off-roadier. And, you know, some extra ground clearance, some extra drive modes. And it was really funny because, you know, typically when I go on an event, I'll post a TikTok and say, hey, this is what I'm driving. If you have any questions, comments, you know, let me know. And I'll try to answer your questions or capture the content, you know, if you have video requests while I'm here. And one of the comments I got was essentially, oh, this is a soccer mom vehicle for somebody who just wants to look tough, but it's just going to, like, run errands.
And if that works for Ford, what's the problem?
This car actually does tough things, though.
I believe that, but it's really weird that people would call out marketing for being effective.
Yeah, but but I was just like, dude, this is a car for people who want to do tough things.
I want to point out that my wife and I bought a Crosstrek, not an Impreza.
Okay.
There's not a whole lot of practical reason to make that leap up to the Crosstrek. You know, an inch more ground clearance and different
right.
wheels and tires, but it's basically the same vehicle. But yet, we bought it, and we completely understand the situation.
Are you taking it off-road?
Never.
But you could.
The Bronco Sport, so you've got a little more capability, and it looks woodsy. That's great.
Well, and then the Sasquatch package makes it even more outdoor, even more woodsy and more capable. And, you know, when we were driving, we went through this really tight canyon and some rocky bits that I would not have thought the Bronco Sport could tackle. And it was just so capable and so impressive in the off-road arena. I was very impressed with it. And then we did like an autocross in sand, and that was a lot of fun. And, you know, I
assume there's a sand mode.
There is. And I'm trying to think. I think maybe it's Baja mode. And then they have like an off-road mode. I believe all Bronco Sports for 2025 get the off-road mode standard. And then with the Sasquatch package and the Badlands model, which is with the up-level engine, there are a couple of extra off-road modes that you can, so like the Baja, and then I feel like there's like a rock crawl mode.
Okay, so it's kind of two different. So what is it? It's Badlands and what? What
are the Outer Banks.
Outer Banks is the other one.
Yep.
So those are the top two trim levels, and the Outer Banks has the three-cylinder engine, and then you get the big two-liter turbo out of the Maverick, basically, in the Badlands.
Yeah, and I mean, we drove them both, and they were a joy to drive. And my driving partner and I, we were looking around the interior, and we're like, does this feel bigger to you? And I'm like, it feels bigger to me. And so we asked the engineers, we're like, okay, we know this is refreshed for this model year. Did you somehow make the interior bigger? And they're like, no, it's all materials. Because they changed like the material texture color, and whatever they did just makes it feel bigger.
Have you ever noticed driving a Volkswagen, especially some of the small crossovers, that the door panels feel especially concave and thin? It seems like a thing that Volkswagen interior designers do to make the interior feel roomier. But they create this illusion of space, and maybe real space, but it's not especially useful, in things like door panels. And,
right.
and the interior actually feels a little wider. And I'm always impressed when they do that. But there's something very tidy about Volkswagen interiors that create that space. So what does it cost to move up into a Sasquatch packaged vehicle?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask me that, and I don't have that number.
But more money, and that is, and those are available now.
I believe if not now, they are available imminently. And but just they tweaked the 2025 model year Bronco Sport.
So there's a light freshening of the whole lineup.
Yes, a whole lineup.
Sasquatch available on the two top trim levels. And then what are the any drawbacks to the Sasquatch? Ride quality, noise.
You know, the noise quality I thought was pretty good, but you're gonna suffer the fuel economy, because I mean it's gonna make it a little bit heavier with the added features and things like that.
Also, the tires they add are never good for fuel economy.
Yeah, no, they're knobby tires, the off-road tires, but or all-terrain tires, I guess I should say. But no, I mean I thought it was a joy to drive. It was easy to drive on road, comfortable. The seats were comfortable. We were in that vehicle for 10 hours. Pretty much straight. And so it was very, very comfortable for a long duration. And it, you know, also like the Maverick gets that 13.2 inch screen. And so, you know, just some general freshening features and drive modes and things like that.
Cool.
Yeah.
And that's on sale nowish?
Yes.
Cool. Yeah. Just so people know, that is the Bronco Sport.
Mm-hmm.
Very popular.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's it.
Yeah.
I like the look of them.
Yeah, you know, and they look a little bit more rugged, I think, for 2025.
My daughter is car shopping, and we're really dragging our feet on this.
Don't drag your feet.
But I kind of like Bronco Sport. And she's got a dog. She needs a crossover with kind of a high roof. So.
Right. No, you should go look at it.
I've test driven it. I like the vehicle a lot, and the three-cylinder is fine.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we talk to Chris Martin of Honda. Stick around.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com. Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom. She's Jill. Jill thinks I should be more discreet about things I say between...
Well, so I've started doing video of the show, and I leave the bits in the middle when we're on break, and he'll say something. I'm like pointing at the camera.
No, I was aware.
Okay,
I think it's very interesting that advertised on my website are bikini pictures of Megyn Kelly. I don't know where that links to. I won't click on that link. I wish it wasn't on my website.
That just makes me ask what you were looking at before that advertisement popped up.
Again, this is producer Randy's commercial computer.
Oh, so we're going to blame producer Randy. Got it. Sorry.
I almost never search for anything here.
Uh-huh.
All right.
Okay.
Help me out here real quick.
You're on social media.
I am, yeah. I'm Car Guy Tom on Twitter, X, and Blue Sky.
Okay.
On the phone with us is Chris Martin. Chris is the Technology Communications Manager for Honda. Chris, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
We are good. Thank you for working on us. I know we moved the schedule around a little bit on you, and we appreciate you accommodating us. But a lot to talk about. Real quick, tell us what you do there at Honda.
I'm in the communications division, and I've done a lot of different things for Honda over 30 years, basically, and including working on our product PR team. And currently, my job is to try to tell everybody about the new technology and safety innovations that we have coming. And it covers a broad range of things, including our new electric vehicles and battery technology and all that kind of thing. So it's a pretty fun set of topics as a lot of advancements are already kind of being introduced and just around the corner.
One of the things that you guys have been sending some PR info out about is level 3 driving. For people who don't know, level 3 is a level of autonomous driving, but it's also a tough one to cross. There's like this line in the sand between what we refer to as level 2 and level 2 plus and level 2 plus plus and level 3.
Right, right.
But you guys have been talking about level 3 technology and how it applies to Honda vehicles and how it applies to safety. What's going on there?
So level 3 is, I think, probably the most the most prominent, close to that level 2 system that people are familiar with in the U.S. is General Motors Super Cruise technology, where you can take your hands off the steering wheel in certain circumstances on certain types of roads, and as long as you're paying attention, it will basically drive the car for you and then warn you if you need to put your hands back on the wheel type of thing. We have a system like that in the Acura ZDX that does something very similar. That's high level 2. Level 3 is the next level where, under similar limited circumstances, you could take your eyes off the road.
Okay.
And let the car handle all of the driving tasks. You still need to be ready in a level 3 car to take back over when the car tells you to, but it's just that next level of automation that takes some of the fatigue-inducing activities, you know, when you're stuck in a traffic jam or something like that, away from the driver and lets you focus on other things.
So, like, to clarify for our audience then, level 2 is a hands-off system where your eyes have to be facing the road, and there's often like a camera pointed at your face making sure you're doing that. But something level 3 would be hands-off, and you could pick up your phone and send a text message. So you wouldn't necessarily need to be paying attention.
Right, right. So it also would have a monitoring system in it and would judge, under the circumstances where it's turned into this level 3 mode, it wouldn't mind that you're not looking at the road. You could theoretically, you know, play a video on the center screen and watch a TV show or something like that. Keep in mind that the way that this system has been implemented in the past, because Honda was the first to implement a level 3 system in the world in Japan on a vehicle called the Honda Legend, that system was designed only to operate at in really, really slow traffic jams type speeds. You know, those of us here in Los Angeles, we know that very well. you get jammed up on the 405, and it's basically, you know, stop and go for 45 minutes to an hour, where it's sort of mind-numbing. And that's the sort of task where the car can handle it. And frankly, the speeds are so low that even if there were to be some sort of incident where another driver didn't, you know, cut you off or rammed into you or whatever, the consequences are relatively small in terms of safety because the speeds are so low. So that's how it could be allowed in its initial sort of phase, is at slower speeds. And then as the technology improves, as other road conditions improve, as regulations sort of catch up to it, there might be an ability to increase the speeds and increase the range of roadways on which it could be in that mode.
Interesting. So, Chris, back to the ZDX. The ZDX system is a full level 3, or did you say it was a 2++ system?
It's a 2+. Yeah, it's very similar to, in fact, it's virtually identical to GM's Super Cruise system.
Gotcha.
So is there, you'd mentioned that there are some level 3 vehicles operational in Japan. Like, are they still operational? And is there anything currently in the United States that is level 3?
I'm not an expert on the on all of the competitor systems. I believe there might be now one competitor, maybe Mercedes, that has initiated a level three vehicle in the U.S. Mm. The one in Japan was the Honda Legend. Mm-hmm. It's now a retired model, but people mm-hmm. still have them on the road, so they're still driving around. But it's an older model. We're not selling that. It was akin to the Acura RDX. I'm getting mixed up now. But anyway, it was akin to an Acura model that has now been retired as well. So it's the challenge. Part of the challenge is not just technological; it's regulatory. Mm-hmm. So in Japan, we had to work with the equivalent of NHTSA in Japan. It's the MLIT to come up with a regulatory framework under which we could introduce a car like this. And so it took a lot of, you know, back and forth to assure the regulators that our system would be safe and wouldn't put people either in our car or in other cars at risk. And so a similar process needs to happen here in the United States. The challenge with the U.S. is that the U.S. is made up of 50 different states, and they regulate their own roadways within the states. So it is... it's a little bit of a hurdle in the U.S. To at least introduce a nationwide rollout of level three. So what you may see in the initial stages is if certain states are open to allowing it. You know, California is doing a lot of automated vehicle testing, for instance. Then there might be a regulatory pathway to see it in certain states first. And then, you know, if the federal government ever decided to take an active role in introducing some sort of legislation or regulation, then maybe that would allow it in more states as well.
So if I'm hearing you right, Chris, we're not going to see full level three much in the U.S. until the government sort of pitches in.
Well, I mean, it's part of the automaker's responsibility to, you know, bring forward the technology and show the regulators what it's capable of doing, mm-hmm. and then work with them like we did with MLIT. So it's not all on just on the government, just to, hey, here's your ticket, go into the world of automation. We need to have our role in it as well. And so Honda is you know, keen to take our experience that we've had in Japan and, you know, and work with regulatory agencies in the U.S. to help make it happen, you know, based on the experience that we have doing the same exact thing in Japan.
So is there any kind of a timeline or a plan to bring Level 3 to the U.S.?
Yes. So you guys may have seen at CES over the last couple of years, we've introduced first a year ago at CES, we introduced this new EV series that we're bringing out called mm-hmm. the Zero Series.
Yeah, good-looking cars.
And then, so the Saloon is the sort of the hero striking one that we showed 2 years ago, and then this year we showed a more evolved version of it, and then we also showed a small, say, CRV-sized EV SUV, and both of those are due to come to the U.S. in the next couple of years. And what we said also at CES was that the Saloon would be capable of level mm-hmm. three driving.
Okay.
And our goal is to you know, introduce it, yes, here in the United States. But as we discussed, there is a regulatory hurdle that needs to be tackled first. So we are working toward that, but we can't make any commitments yet as to exactly when the vehicle would be able to activate its level three capabilities.
Chris, what is the driving force behind autonomy right now? Is it consumer demand? Is it safety concerns? Or is it simply an expectation of premium vehicles? It seems like something that manufacturers are working very hard to get to, but I'm not 100% clear what the motivation is.
Well, Honda's motivation is primarily safety. And what we experienced when we first started out putting in automatic emergency braking, we call ours collision mitigation braking system. It's a much longer term. I prefer AEB. When we first started putting AEB in vehicles, in fact, we were the first in the U.S. with the Acura RL back in 2005. What we experienced was that most drivers, they don't really understand those systems, and they don't really necessarily immediately see the benefit of it. You know, most drivers don't think, oh, I'm going to go get in a crash, right? Or I don't need this. I'm a good driver, that sort of thing. So in order to sort of proliferate the technology in a bigger way, what we started doing was bundling it together in a package, in a suite of features, some of which have other benefits to customers, like adaptive cruise control or lane keeping assist that helps you steer the car, stuff like that. We kind of gave people the medicine and a sweet pill, so to speak. So I think as we get into levels of automation, like level three at really, really slow speeds, there may not be an extremely high safety benefit in that, though certainly there's a good possibility you'll get in fewer little fender benders in traffic if the car is handling it for you. Safety-wise, the further levels of automation that are coming, as we get larger ranges of speed for level three, and larger ranges of roadways on which it can activate, and ultimately when we could maybe get to level four with, advanced sensor technology and really good computers, there's a good chance that you would see a reduction in the driver-caused types of crashes that occur.
Okay.
People get distracted. People are impaired. There's also, the side benefit beyond safety of just increasing mobility for a lot of people who can no longer drive, elderly people or people who have other disabilities. So there's sort of an improvement in general mobility for everyone when we get to that. So there's a lot of reasons to do it, but the primary reason for Honda is getting to zero fatalities, which is a major goal of ours by 2050.
Well, it's a great goal. Now, my understanding is that level five is basically a car without a steering wheel. What is level four?
So level four level four could theoretically be a car without a steering wheel. That's not something that Honda's contemplating for our general passenger vehicles, per se, because we think people still do enjoy driving at certain times. But level four is nearly all, don't quote me as the expert, there are clearly written rules. Here's my basic understanding is level five is your car can go anywhere automated. That might include a grass parking lot at a festival.
Okay.
That's in no way mapped. It could include a dirt road that's on no maps. It's like a fully independent creature. Level four is a step down from that. it would have some restrictions on where it could go, essentially, but it could still drive itself.
I have a tech question for you, if you don't mind. We hear much from Elon Musk about the fact that for Tesla to achieve true autonomy, they don't need LiDAR, and LiDAR is basically using light and laser. To do some of the scanning and sensing. What is Honda's take on that, and are you guys using LiDAR?
So we have used LiDAR. Our Level 3 system in Japan did use LiDAR. I can't say, how it's all going to go in the future. Cameras are getting better, and really it's partially a sensor problem, but it's also a computing problem. The computers need to get really, really fast at recognizing what's a threat, what's not a threat, to the vehicle, in order, and then reacting very, very quickly to take, some sort of avoidance action. So there's the potential in the long term that you could have a pure camera-based system that could accomplish really high levels of autonomy. So far for Honda, we've engaged with radar and LiDAR and cameras. You see on the current Civic and the HRV, we actually went to an all-camera-based Honda sensing system those. Similar to Subaru has an all-camera-based system that they've been using for years called EyeSight, I believe. Mm-hmm. So it's possible to do these things with cameras, but they do have limitations. There are weather conditions and other things like that have proven difficult for the camera-based systems, and that's where having something like LiDAR and radar right now can help. But that doesn't mean that future camera systems and really advanced computing systems couldn't do it with cameras alone.
Interesting. Chris, we've run out of time, but tell us real quick, what should we see in terms of autonomous innovation from Honda in the near and midterm?
Well, aside from Honda Sensing, which is now standard on everything, and that gives you, basically a level two system, a low level two system, in every car that we sell, Honda or Acura. So that's available to everybody now. If they went and got into any recent model Honda or Acura, they could experience those. Next up is that level three system that we were talking about for the new Saloon, which is our new Zero Series EV coming in the next year or two. And that will, of course, try to make some hay with that. So hopefully we'll make some good news, and you guys will get a chance to experience it, and then we'll have a lot of people talking about it.
Yeah, looking forward to that. Chris, thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it was great. All right, that was Chris Martin with Honda. We're going to take a break, and when we come back...
Quiz time.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com. Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
And we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom. She's Jill. I learned stuff just now.
I know. I guess I didn't realize that there was already some level three versions of vehicles already in consumers' hands.
I knew about this, and I didn't read that much about it because it was kind of offshore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not good at keeping track of things in Japan and Europe.
Right.
Because there's too much to keep track of here.
There is, in fact, too much to keep track of here.
But there is something called geofencing, and that's
yes.
where the vehicle is limited to a certain area to do the things that it does. And that Mercedes that Chris was talking about, I think is just California, and I think it's L.A. and north of L.A., but it is geofenced to that area. And it's like that, too, with the Ford and General Motors
Blue
systems.
Blue Cruise and Super Cruise.
Where it's mapped roads.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
All right. You're a social media bug.
I am.
A social gadfly.
I am a social gadfly. Yes, I am. I am in social media. You can find me at Jill Simonello, and I use the hashtag car du jour. So kind of like soup du jour. Because it's the car that I'm driving today. And Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Facebook, Blue Sky, Threads, LinkedIn. Yes.
You can find me
in all of the places. And I would say if there is a social medium out there, I'm probably on it.
Why would people do this?
I like to talk about the cars that I'm driving. And so like on TikTok, one of the things that I do frequently, and then I sometimes filter it over Instagram, if I'm driving a vehicle, I talk about the things that I like on the vehicle and then the things that I didn't like on the vehicle. And so I try to sometimes it's very Jill specific. It's things that, annoy me, like in the Lobo that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, the Ford Maverick Lobo, the gas pedal is really short. And my feet are very small, and my foot kept slipping off of the gas pedal because because my feet are so small.
I have had a similar problem.
Okay.
I have wide feet.
Okay.
4E, wide feet. And I have grabbed both the brake and gas pedal at the same time sometimes. And that's bad.
That is not ideal.
No.
That's not good. But so, you'll see insights like that from me on my social media. And that is why you should follow me.
All right. There you have it. Follow Jill.
Yes.
Today's quiz, right up your alley. Are you ready?
It is probably not up my alley, but okay.
Car Stuff Podcast Power Quiz. Today's topic is Buick or Chrysler.
Okay.
You've heard of both, I think.
I have heard of both. Yes.
Both of these brands did things before they built cars. Buick was way, way back, but the first car was the 1904 Model B. And I believe the first Chrysler motorized vehicle, was the 1924 Chrysler 6.
Okay.
But these were both premium vehicles going way back.
Okay. And are we talking about 1904 and 19? Thank you.
No, much more current than that.
Thank you.
I'm going to give you a model. You just have to tell me if it is a Chrysler or a Buick.
Okay.
I was keeping that alpha. Buick or a Chrysler. Are you ready?
Okay.
Five questions plus the bonus question. Bonus question always related to the topic of the day.
Mm.
You need to get three for a win.
Okay.
Ready?
Yes.
The Apollo. The Apollo. Was that a Buick or a Chrysler?
Buick Apollo, Chrysler Apollo. I'm like, I have no idea. I'm like, which one sounds better? I'm going to say Chrysler.
Nope, that was a Buick. Mm. And it was one of the many vehicles based on the Chevy Nova during the day.
Got it.
Kind of a good looking little car. These only the Chevy Nova sold well. The Buick version and the Oldsmobile version were dogs, sales dogs. The Pontiac did okay. That was the Ventura.
Okay. So, fun fact for you. The very first car that I started to learn how to drive a manual transmission on was a Chevy Nova.
Probably not one of these Novas. It was probably the Toyota-based Nova.
Could be.
Small front drive car.
Yeah. I mean, it was my friend's car, my friend Amy, and she thought it would be fun to try and teach me how to drive a manual transmission, and I failed miserably.
Yeah, I think that was the Toyota-based Nova.
Okay.
A nice car, a nice shifter.
Okay, yeah, I failed miserably when I was 16, so.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh, you have no points.
No, yeah, no
All right.
points.
Are you ready?
Yep.
Conquest.
I'm going to say Chrysler.
Yes, the Chrysler Conquest. This car's got a crazy history. So it was sold as a Chrysler between 1987 and 1989. It was based on the Mitsubishi Starion. And it was actually a rather cool, rather well-loved rear-drive turbocharged little coupe.
Okay.
Very cool car. It was sold for some reason as a Plymouth and as a Dodge before 1987. And the Mitsubishi Starion, which was also sold in the United States, went on longer. But actually kind of collectible now. Really cool looking. Very Japanese looking.
Okay.
Like if you're looking for a car with Japanese styling, this is classic stuff.
Okay.
You have 1 point.
Okay.
Sebring.
Chrysler.
Yes.
That one I know.
Yep, Sebring. Chrysler, there were so many versions and variants of this, it's not worth getting into. But between 1995 and 2010, it replaced the LeBaron and was replaced by the Cirrus? Or is that the other way around? I think it replaced the Cirrus.
Okay.
So the cloud cars, you remember the Cirrus and the Stratus?
I drive a Dodge Stratus.
There you go.
That's a Saturday Night Live thing with Will Ferrell.
Oh, I never saw that.
Where he was, that's why I know Dodge Stratus, because he was talking about, he was like a mid-level executive in a company and nobody was listening to him. He's like at a dinner table. I feel like maybe it was a skit. Miley Cyrus was in it or something, but he's like, I drive a Dodge Stratus, because he was trying to say how important he was.
There was a very funny thing, and this was not a Saturday Night Live sketch, but it was something like that, where someone was doing a fake commercial for the used Dodge Aries.
Okay.
I don't know why. But one of the lines was, 80% of Dodge Aries owners have a fixed address.
Okay.
Oh, anyway, that made me laugh.
Okay.
Cordoba. You should know this one.
Yeah, because I feel like
it's fundamental to my automotive existence.
You've talked about this before, and the last time you mentioned it, I was reciting a Spanish poem. Cordoba, lejana y sola, jaca negra, luna grande. And oddly, I don't remember which one it went to.
Oh, that's a shame.
I'm going to say Chrysler.
Yes, the Chrysler Cordoba. Important for a bunch of reasons. One,
okay.
Up until this time, Chrysler had only built large premium cars. 1975, the Cordoba came out, and it was a midsize coupe, which they referred to as small. And the commercials almost apologized for the smallness of the vehicle. But the 1975 car, and then subsequent models of the Cordoba, the spokesperson was Ricardo Montalban. Who would go on to play Khan, making him one of the coolest humans ever.
Right. I feel like we've had conversations about him before because...
Oh, yeah.
I kept mistaking him for who is the guy that was in Fantasy Island.
That is Ricardo Montalban.
Is it? Yeah. Oh, then I didn't mistake it. I got it right.
Unless you mean the little person.
No, I do not.
All
I
right.
do not.
Hervé Valdés. That's three, right? You won?
Yeah.
All right.
Woo.
Riata.
Buick.
Yep. Yep. Gary Whittenberg.
Mm-hmm. Who was on
he
a couple weeks
one.
Ago.
Yeah. He owns a Riata.
Okay.
So the Riata was available. It was a two-door vehicle, little sporty thing built by Buick, powered by the legendary 3800 coupe or convertible.
Okay.
The Riata. All right. So you got four.
Wow.
All right. Nice
That
job.
Went better than I thought it would.
Yeah.
I mean, a little bit of a rocky start there, but that went better than I thought it would.
All right. Popeyes.
Chicken?
Yep.
Okay.
You've been to Popeyes?
No.
Never?
No.
No, this isn't going to help you anyway.
No.
There were 3,000 Popeyes locations in the U.S. How many do you think there are in Malta?
Malta's a very small country.
Yes.
Very small.
By the way, my daughter helped me with this bonus question, too.
Okay. I'm going to say like 10.
None.
Okay.
None. How many do you think there are in Spain?
10.
140.
Okay.
This is, I just need you to tell me which of the following is not on the Popeye's Spain menu. Are you ready?
Okay.
The deluxe mango salmon sandwich, the jazzy bacon sandwich, the lime mayo and sweet chili wings, or my favorite, the Louisiana cheese balls, which sounds like a minor league baseball team.
Or something that is not fit for radio discussion.
I'll read them again.
Yeah.
Because they're funny. Mm-hmm. The deluxe mango salmon sandwich, the jazzy bacon sandwich, the lime mayo and sweet chili wings, and the Louisiana cheese balls.
I mean, the...
One of those is fake.
The bacon thing and then the cheese balls. Those are the two that I'm waffling between.
Mm-hmm.
I don't... Does Spain really do bacon?
They do ham in a big way.
They do ham, but I just don't know if they do bacon.
What are they going to do with the rest of the pig? I don't know. I don't know. They're just like super into ham. I know that.
Yeah. Humbone. I don't know if... I don't know. I've been to Spain a couple of times. I don't remember bacon, ever.
You can look, because I didn't in any way indicate...
And why would they have Louisiana?
That's a great question.
But, I mean, Popeyes is like a Southern franchise.
That is their thing. That is their brand. So if you're bringing the brand there, so love that chicken from Spain. Gonna need an answer.
I'll say the Louisiana cheese balls.
Yeah, those are real.
Wow.
When I saw that on the Spanish menu, I knew you were not going to get this because that seems so weird.
Uh-huh.
But the deluxe mango salmon sandwich is the fake.
Really?
Salmon would not be a common thing, I think, in Spain.
But it's surrounded by water.
Not salmon water.
No, but...
Salmon are like Alaskan.
Yeah,
Midwest.
I have Alaskan fish.
I don't know.
Here?
I don't know. I'm talking, I don't know.
Okay.
Anyway, you didn't get the bonus question. You got four of the other ones, though. I'm going to sign that for you.
Okay.
We have a couple minutes here left, and I just saw this chart that I wanted to talk about.
Okay.
And forgive me, I do not remember who printed this chart. But it's fascinating.
Okay.
And it is the prices, the used car prices of different Tesla models.
Okay.
Compared to last year.
Okay.
And they are frightening.
Oh.
So we'll start this. The overall average used car price 1 year ago to today is up 1%.
And like overall every model, not just Tesla.
Right.
Okay.
The whole market. And then these are not for particular model years, just for these vehicles.
Okay.
In general. So all model years. The Tesla Model S, which is probably, that's the original Tesla that started selling in volume. That's the big sedan. Probably going to be discontinued soon. They stopped selling them in Japan because of the tariffs.
Okay.
Anyway, that is down. Man, the average transaction price in 2024, 1 year ago, was $58,000. Now it's $48,000.
Wow.
So it's down 10 grand or 17%. The Tesla Model Y, which is the hyper popular small crossover.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Colangelo bought one, as I mentioned. He's very happy with it. The average transaction price 1 year ago was $35,000. Now it's $31,000. So that's down almost $5,000, 13%. The Model 3, the most affordable Tesla, small sedan, arguably the best looking Tesla, from $29,000 to $26,000. That's down 11%. The Tesla Model X, which is the weird big crossover.
Right, with the gull wing doors.
Yes. Yes. Do you know what those are actually called? Do you remember?
Aren't they like X-Wing or...
Falcon doors.
Oh, Falcon doors, right.
Yeah, and it was one of those things...
Star Wars.
It's one of those things that like was predictive of the trouble that Tesla was going to have with the Cybertruck.
Yeah.
They could not get those doors right.
Right.
And they kept delaying the launch of that vehicle because it had stupid doors. That vehicle is down from $60,000 to $56,000. That's down 7%. And then the average Tesla is down 10%.
Wow.
Used car prices from 1 year ago to today. So, wow.
So we were talking recently about used car prices going up. And apparently, if you want a used car, buy a Tesla because those are going down.
That, you know what? Yes. And that's a problem because obviously it's socially now a problem to buy a Tesla, especially in some markets. And that's a shame because getting a used Model 3 or a used Model Y will serve some people very, very well.
Yeah.
And it's a shame that they would not be able to do that now. And I'm not blaming anyone in particular, except maybe Elon Musk, for what happened, but it is now politically unpopular to buy Tesla product.
That is true.
And that's a shame.
Yeah.
Well, you have these really good, proven used vehicles out there.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing that's washing these prices out, too, is that Hertz dumped some more of their fleet, their EV fleet.
Okay.
I don't know if they have much left anymore.
Yeah.
So that's flooding that market, too. But this is kind of a shame.
It's interesting. So I caught an Uber a few weeks ago, and I was picked up in a Model Y. Mm-hmm. And it was brand spanking new. And I was...
How was the rear seat space in that?
It was... Well, okay.
I'm asking the wrong person.
You are asking the wrong person. So 4'11" here. It was very large. It was perfect. It was great.
I'm a little squished in that car.
Yeah. It was fine for me.
Yeah.
And fine for most people. I mean, Uber driver had it. But so I was like grilling him, like, how do you like it? You know, what do you like most about it? How are you getting used to the... And he like loves that car. I feel like it's the second Tesla he's had, and he is just gaga over it. He's like, I'm really sorry that a lot of the political climate is against this vehicle right now, but he's like, I just love this car so much, I don't care.
Yeah. Interesting thing, too, is that there were all sorts of quality control issues with the Model 3 and the Model Y, but they were largely superficial.
Mm-hmm.
There were things that were damaged on the bodywork, you know, things that didn't fit right, stuff like that, because they're just slapping these things together and getting them out the door. But fundamentally and technically, they seem to work pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And we keep hearing that the batteries last forever.
Yeah.
That whole thing that we worried about for a decade when talking about electric vehicles, that the batteries are going to go dead after 5 years and what were you going to do? Turning out not to be an issue. And the thing that we keep forgetting, too, is that there is a federally mandated 8-year 100,000-mile warranty on the battery and the electric vehicle parts. So you're covered. Now, I think that's pro rata, so it's possible you don't get money for the full battery, but still, you're largely covered.
Yeah. No, they did that because people were so paranoid about batteries dying and having to spend $30,000 to buy a new battery on the car that's worth less than that. So.
Yep. So this is all kind of a bummer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're protesting Tesla, it's working.
Yeah. Clearly.
So, and I understand why you would do that. But on the other hand, it's kind of there's this pool of affordable EVs out there. You know, it'd be cool. Like first drivers, you know, guys in high school saving up. I mean, these are crazy affordable now.
Well, you know, I've started seeing a lot of bumper stickers on Tesla vehicles that, you know, I bought this before Elon went crazy.
I wish that was sufficient defense. You know, you get that bumper sticker and then it's cool for you to buy a used Tesla.
Right.
That would be great.
Yeah.
All right. Guess what we did?
We had another great show.
We did, yeah. It was good talking to Chris Martin of Honda.
Yes.
So that was cool. And I think, I don't think we know who's coming up next week.
We do, but the crystal ball is a little fuzzy at the moment.
All right, sounds good. All right, thank you to Chris Martin of Honda. Thank you, Jill. Thank you to producer Randy and the good folks here at TalkZone. Let's talk more about cars again.
Next week.
Remember to check us out at consumerguide.com.
The Car Stuff Podcast is produced by J-Turn Media.
To advertise on the show, please drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.